No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. We're going to have what I think is a lighthearted, fun conversation tonight with a dear friend of mine, Kiki Dombrowski. She was on Banal of America way back in July of 2020 when we were all kind of mentally shattered from the pandemic. So it'll be fun to catch up with her now that we're not all constantly worried about wearing masks and everything. She's an author, as you may recall, of multiple books, co-author with Lisa Chamberlain of Self-Care for Witches, as well as Magical Astrology for Witches. And she's the author of A Curious Future, a handbook of unusual divination and unique oracle traditions or techniques, excuse me. And that came out a few years ago, and there was a reissue of it relatively recently, I think since we last chatted back in July of 2020. As I said, she's an author, professional tarot card reader, spiritual researcher, and explorer who has spent her life studying mythology, magic, tarot, witchcraft, and the supernatural. And as I said on the introduction there, a dear friend of mine, we had the chance to hang out multiple times down in Nashville at the Strange Realities Conference, and she's awesome. We've explored the Bell Witch Cave together, so you can't pass up you can't take that away from us. It was awesome. So welcome back to the show, Kiki. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you again.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to talk with you and catch up because we saw each other, at the Bell Witch Cave.
Yeah, that was our last hang back in November at the Bell Witch Cave. Now,
that's right.
At the risk of myself, of me going off on a tangent, I know you didn't get it all the way on Monday, but did you see the eclipse when it passed over Nashville like 7 years ago?
Yes. So I was really, really fortunate. 7 years ago, I worked for Nashville Parks and Recreation, and they had just acquired a new park. It wasn't open to the public. It was completely empty, and it was fenced and locked. And I just politely asked somebody, supervisor, I said, can I go in the park for the eclipse? And they're like, yeah, no problem. So I had a key. I got into this park, went up to the top of a hill with a friend of mine and had the most clear, unobstructed view of the eclipse. Wow. And from where we were, we could actually hear cheering from the town around us.
Oh, wow.
And we were the only two people there for miles and miles. It was a really magical moment. This previous Monday, on the other hand, though, I saw it on the way to a doctor's appointment through the clouds. So I took a really quick, I was like, oh my God, there it is, there it is. And so I took a really quick picture and felt satisfied and it's a really, really wonderful thing. And I wanted to ask you too, did you have a good view?
I had a pretty good view. Yeah, weather-wise, it was fine. I wasn't on high. It was – as I said, I'm afraid – I'm going to talk for a bit here because I had the experience. I had the whole totality experience, and I don't know if you and I had talked about it before, but Josh Cutchin and I had talked about it because he did it in 2017. He was just, raving about it and said it was like seeing a UFO, and it was just a really transformative experience. So when I knew it was coming through Vermont, I'm like, well, I can get there easily. So I went there and brought my lovely 78-year-old mom with me because it was like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So it's sure. It was kind of like a birthday present. I'm like, well, let's go. I'll take you up to the eclipse and we'll see this. And I think neither one of us really knew what to expect, even though we had heard of that it's like awesome and everything. So, and then we went to this, we went up to this city in Vermont, Rutland, and then we drove on Sunday because it was like, this is going to be crazy up here. So I kind of plotted this all out in my head ahead of time, but really haphazardly. So I was kind of nervous because I'm usually like a super planner. And so we, from Rutland on Monday morning, we drove an hour. I pulled up this app that was like, here's where the totality is. Here's how long it lasts in all these places. So like, and here's where you are essentially. So like, I figured out, okay, there's a city, a little town. It's actually a city. It's the smallest city in Vermont. It's called the Little City.
Oh.
Vergennes. Yeah. Really
never
nice.
Heard of it.
Yeah. Neither have I. It's like your quintessential small New England town.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes, with like, you know, like a little main street that has all the sort of mom and pop shops and stuff, and just really. Really, really cool. So that was like an hour from Rutland. So we left like super early Monday morning, got up there. I'm like, I don't know what to expect. We got like the perfect parking space. Next thing you know, the place is just filled with people. And I had like, it was interestingly, conversely, kind of like the opposite of your experience in a way. I was among the people cheering. So like the whole, like hundreds of people gathered on this town common. To watch this, it was like this huge communal thing. And like, we had debated when we got into Vergennes, like, all right, where should we watch this? When originally we were going to watch it down by like this river where there was like this waterfall. It's like a hydrologic, you know, where they get the power from the waterfall even. So, but it was like loud and shit. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to experience this here. I feel like I want to be around a whole bunch of people. So that's what we did. So as you know, like you watch it, takes a long time. But the moment, like, as you get closer and closer to the totality, it's just like, it's so exciting. And you can see me, but it's like people at home, like, I have the glasses on, you're looking up at the sun and you're watching as it gets more and more obscured. Then you kind of take it on, peek around, look around at like what it's like around you. And it's just getting darker and darker. And you kind of like keep switching back and forth. And finally, you know, like, because you knew what time it was going to happen. Like, everybody's watching for like that final minute. And it's like, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes. And they're like, ah. And then there's all this cheering and everything. And then I took the, you know, for people who don't get it or can't picture it, like, so you're looking and you're seeing this tiny little, dot shrink down to nothing. Then once it's gone, as you're watching in the glasses, it's just black. So then you take the glasses off. I tip them up over my eyes, and right where you were fucking watching is the eclipse. And it's the most spectacular thing you could fucking see. I get almost choked up. I was getting more choked up or right after it happened Monday. I'm starting to get a handle on my feelings now, but it was that fucking amazing. It was, you know, I'd put it in the, you know, top 10 or maybe even top 5 moments of my life. It was like that, just earth shattering. It was really, really amazing. And like, my body felt like, I think I had like some kind of weird, almost panic attack, but not like in a scared way. It was like adrenaline and like a weak in the knees kind of thing. And just like, and I remember, because there's all these people around, and they're all just like, you just hear it all over, like, oh my God, oh my God.
Right, right.
And everyone's like, oh my God, oh wow, oh wow. And it was just like, it was tremendous. And then it ended, and there was this fucking, like, just feeling of euphoria among everybody. And it was like, if we could, everybody would have just gotten into a huge, massive, like, hug. It was just like, people were just so, like, overjoyed. It was amazing. It was really, really an amazing experience. I'm so happy that I made the trip, because I was like, I don't know, fucking eclipse. And the funny part is, you hear like people say that. Like, we were at the Denny's and there was like a couple of waitresses talking about it, and they're like, well, we're gonna get 99 down here in Rutland, so that's good enough. And it's like, no, you don't get
it. Like, you got to get the full thing.
You got to get the full thing. That's the weirdest, most amazing part too to me, was like that even when it's like 99%, like, you still can't fucking look up at the sun. And then when it ends and that little tiny sliver comes back, it just goes pop, and like the ring is gone and it's back to being the sun, even though it's just a tiny little bit, even though it's like a tiny, tiny little dot. Like, when you look in the glasses, it's that old sun that you always see. So
It's such a mystical experience, and I there's something that is so spectacular about feeling, not just experiencing, but feeling this like sort of darkness take over in the middle of the day, and people are responding, animals are responding.
Yeah.
And even the shadows, when the eclipse is happening, if you look at the shadows, they're really screwy and weird looking.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a lifetime experience. And for anybody that has the opportunity to be in the path of totality for an eclipse, it's, yeah, 10 out of 10, yeah. I think we both would recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sorry, because, like, I you're the guest, but as soon as I knew I was talking, I'm like, I'm going to fucking end up talking about this eclipse.
But that's okay. I actually wanted to ask you if you had a nice time and if you enjoyed it and got to see it and had good weather. And down this way, the weather wasn't so great. I know that there were pockets here and there. I think in Kentucky, I don't think it was Kentucky, maybe right over, I don't know, Indiana. I don't know. We're like right above us where totality was. I think it cleared out. But it's such a special experience. And I know that there is another one going over America in like 20 years. And I was like, I'll still be alive and kicking around that time, knock on wood.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to get a glimpse of that wild totality again, because it really is. It's a game changer. It's really cool.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's one, there's like two back to back. There's like one that's kind of goes over North Dakota or whatever, and like super high up, you know, then the next one the year after, like, goes right across America from like California down to Georgia. So it's like,
whoa. Oh, that's good to know.
So
you better book your rooms now.
Yeah, I know. We'll all be like in our 60s or 70s or whatever. It'll be like, all right, we're, you know, it's
we'll strange it. Reality cool. Showing up with our walkers.
Yeah. Be awesome.
But now I think it would be fun to have like a little Strange Realities eclipse party.
I think definitely by the time I get to that age, it'll be like, I'll be like retired for, you know, it'll just be like, let's all just meet up, because we'll all hopefully not be working really anymore. So, like, God willing.
Beautiful thought.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was the eclipse experience. It was pretty amazing.
And Vermont is awesome too. It's a great place to visit, and I always enjoy my time there.
It's a
super
nice place.
Good.
It's sweet. So what have you been up to? It's been like 4 years. I mean, you've done a lot. What stands out? Geez. Well, no, I mean, you have. I mean,
yeah. What have I done? It's like, how do I? So it is. It's interesting. We did talk in July 2020, and then in August 2020, I packed it up and moved it out to the islands. And I lived on the islands east of Savannah for the remainder of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I would still be there right now, but my job requires us to be in the office one day a week.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh. So I begrudgingly, you know, returned to Nashville. But I'm also very blessed to have, you know, the opportunity, the professional opportunity that I have. So I'm, you know, thankful for that.
Yeah.
I spent most of the pandemic just beach combing, looking for UFOs over the ocean, having success once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I wrote a whole bunch of stuff. So, yes, you were right. But a curious, so I self-published two books a while ago, and it was a really, really great learning experience. And I'm really thankful I did that. But I also decided that the books just needed to be revamped. They needed polishing. They needed updating. They needed, you know, to be zhushed up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
So the second edition of A Curious Future was like duplicated, you know, doubled in size, published through Which Way Publishing, which is a wonderful, wonderful indie publisher out of New Orleans. And after that, I teamed up with Lisa Chamberlain, who is just a really popular author on Amazon for her, you know, books on witchcraft. They're really user-friendly, short, you know, guides that people really, you can access no matter what your background is and, you know, no matter what your level is. So I co-authored two books with her, one on astrology and another on self-care, which, you know, talking about the pandemic, the self-care book I actually wrote during the pandemic. So it was a really, really nice experience. You know, I didn't get into the sourdough thing. So there's at least like no chapter on like how to make magical sourdough, but I did do gardening. I did a lot of, you know, meditation and, you know, crystal grids and sound healing, you know, so like I did the whole healer thing. I went in 100% to do the self-care book. So
interesting.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. So those three books were published. Other than that, recently I just completed and sent off my draft for my tarot book to my publisher.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so that will be my fourth book. It's called Transformative Tarot, and it is giant. I think I wrote too much. So it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, how it looks when it's all complete. I don't have a release date yet. I'm just being patient with my publisher because my publisher was really patient with me.
Yeah.
What else have I done? I moved. I'm painting a lot.
You went to Egypt and did the whole.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm traveling way too much. Almost like I draw a blank when I think about how much I do, but like the last two out of country trips I did were Egypt and the Dominican Republic.
Nice.
And I caught COVID from both of those trips.
Oh God. Really?
Yes.
I knew about the Egypt one. I didn't know about
And the DR also. Yeah. Just another day in paradise.
You're like collecting international versions of COVID. That was the joke down in Nashville, that you didn't just get COVID, you got the Egyptian COVID.
I know, like I got the curse of the mummy COVID.
Yeah. Well, what's it like? I've always wanted to go to Egypt. I don't think we talked about this. If we did, it was in Nashville. I don't recall it, but what is it like? Talk about like seeing, you know, the eclipse, and it's like I feel like I would almost have that same reaction in a way to see the pyramids and the Sphinx, like be there and see it before my very eyes. Like I think that would be almost not equally, but certainly in the realm of the same sort of experience. So I mean, what was that like to see? I mean, was it scary? First of all, like, because I was talking to somebody recently who went for like their 50th birthday, and I'm like, I'd like to go, but I'm like scared because it seems dangerous, dangerous down there right now as it is. So it's I don't want to, you know. So I mean, what was the talk a little bit about both those aspects of it? Like, what was it like, you know, on a, you know, spiritual level, I guess you could say, and also just as a traveler, what was it like?
Well, on a personal level, it was a very interesting time in my life to be going to Egypt. I was going through a lot of transitions. I was doing a lot of, there were a lot of growing pains happening at that point in my life. So, Egypt was exactly where I needed to be at that time. Egypt is like experiencing the solar eclipse in totality for the duration of your trip. It's so magical. I am actually trying to go again next year.
Oh, wow.
There is, an author, Freddie Silva, who said you have to visit temples twice and the second, you know, to introduce yourself the first time and the second time you go, you know, you really are having sort of a personal interaction with them. So I think I'm ready to go have a second visit with all the places. It was incredible. It was life changing. It's beautiful. It is dangerous. Yeah. We had police escorts. It was like a bodyguard escort walk me to the ATM.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's a really strange experience to think about it that way as well, because you're going to all of these sacred sites. You're having this very emotional response and spiritual interaction with these sacred locations that feels so intense and important.
Yeah.
And then like you go outside and you see the Nile and it's full of plastic and
they treat
their animals like shit. And, you know, people are scamming you left and right. And, you know, obviously, but, you know, we were really protected. And for that, I feel really grateful and also, you know, recognize that you know, I'm very blessed and entitled to have had that opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just have to be safe and smart and, you know, stick with people you know. And yeah, I feel that way about anywhere you go on the world.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I mean,
But even no matter how much people say it's dangerous, I mean, I'm still going back.
Like, yeah,
it doesn't matter. I don't care what's happening. Yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah. And it's not like North Korea or something like where you could end up in jail. Like, it's, you know, as long as you're, like you're saying, as long as you're smart and keep your head on, you know, straight.
Right.
You should probably be all right. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's kind of gives me the willies in a way because you just don't know what, you don't know what you might encounter.
One of my favorite stories about sort of like the contrast or the contrasting feeling between the spiritual experience and, you know, the reality of this dimension, the third dimension in Egypt, in Cairo, Egypt, 2022.
Yeah.
We did a tour of the Great Pyramid and like laid in the sarcophagus in the king's chamber.
Oh, wow.
And like people were like, you know, and they yell at you like it was a private tour. But if you're there like during just like regular hours and you meditate or sing, the guards will stop you. They'll say no meditation allowed, no prayer allowed, or, you know, there's these interesting rules. But after that event, I mean, obviously laying in a sarcophagus in the king's chamber in the Great Pyramid is sort of this like absolutely mind-blowing experience. And you just feel your body leave this world and go straight to Sirius, right? Or something wild and out of this world. And when we were done, you leave and there's this sort of descent down this very, very narrow tunnel.
Yeah.
And at points you kind of feel like you're bowing down. And when you exit the pyramid, you look out across this stunning view of the Cairo skyline.
Yeah.
And it's like sparkling and you're just like, I've been reborn. Like I remember leaving and going, I have been reborn into this world. I am a reborn person. And then the next thing I heard was a guard going, excuse me, miss, it's time to leave. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, well, here I am back again. Hello, human life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's I highly recommend it for anybody that's able to go. And when you go as well, you know, like I'm not. You know, I won't say that like I'm a theorist of like any sort of like big speculative theories about how things were built in Egypt. I guess that's like the nicest way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, like I think humans did it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But when you go there and you see it in person, you just go, how did they do it? And what knowledge have we lost?
Yeah.
Like there's a gap. There's something missing. Whatever they were able to do to put that together it's just, when you see it in person, it's just,
world. Yeah. I feel like it's almost like UFO in a way. It's like there's something to it, but I can't quite put my finger on, like, there's something a little that there's something special about it beyond what it is. You know what I mean? It's like, how did they, like, what inspired them to even come up with this fucking giant pyramid? You know what I mean? It's like there's something there. I feel like there's some kind of weird element there that we don't quite have our hands around.
Just the amount of spiritual experiences I had, like, even, like, I remember when we did the cruise down the Nile, the whole time I was on the Nile, I was having these insanely vivid dreams.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I was just so emotional and I just had these different experiences and encounters at the different temples. So like I said, like I'm saving my pennies. Maybe I'll put out another couple books and put it all in a piggy bank somewhere and try and get back over there again. There's some great tours out there and I highly recommend just finding a tour with a bunch of metaphysicians and, you know, like-minded individuals. They're out there. It's really great. Like the group that we were with, you know, we all had our crystals with us and we're all charging our crystals and like, you know, we had dowsing rods and, you know, like everything. We're all like, you know, singing and, you know, chant, you know, it was just such a wonderful group of people. So I was really, really thankful to be a participant in that.
It's something I would love to do. It's, I was really envious when I heard that you were going. Now I have a tarot question for you that kind of came into my head as I was, as we were chatting. Okay. Now, you know how we know our friends there, they made the UFO tarot. You've mentioned the Golden Girls tarot card. Let me see if I can put this question into words. Like I think of the Rider Waite Smith. I had the woman who, made the cards, actually, the woman who drew the cards.
That's Smith. Very nice.
You know that.
The
Rider-Waite Smith deck. It's like that's sort of the template. But like how – when – let's say you're going to make another – like a set or whatever. Like what are the stuff that you have to include specifically? Are there certain elements to the cards that then get replayed into each iteration of them? So I guess what are – you don't have to go through all of them. I mean, you kind of understand what I'm saying. Like it's – give me sort of an example of something. But if you're going to make a X card, it has to have this, that, and the other thing.
Sure. And you might get a varied answer depending on the tarot reader that you did talk with. But there is a formula with each tarot deck. For a tarot deck to be a tarot deck, there has to be the major arcana and the minor arcana. And the major arcana are those cards that – you know, like the Death card, the Hermit, High Priestess. That's our major arcana. Those are meant to be sort of like these significant, influential, powerful magical cards. And the minor arcana, which I still believe are as magical and influential as the major, the minor arcana are said to be more indicative of our day-to-day, you know, things. Yeah. The minor arcana is split out into four suits, kind of like when you think of like a regular playing card deck. There's the there's the wands, the cups, the swords, and the pentacles.
There you go.
I wrote a book on this, I swear. It's kind of like, you know, when you haven't said it out loud for a while, you're like, oh, it's like the seven dwarfs. When you're making the tarot deck, you have to be sure to include each of the major arcana and you have to follow the four suits. Now, people do variations on the suits. So let's say the wands, for example. Let's use the wands. Okay. The wands are they're the element of fire, right? So each of the suits, each of the minor arcana suits represents one of the elements. Okay. And the wands represent the element of fire. So you might find certain tarot decks that do something playful with the element of fire. So instead of doing the wands, they may do, I don't know, whatever, like the Ace of Candles. Like think of like different, I don't know. I wish I had a weird tarot deck in front of me because.
Okay. So they can kind of tweak it a little bit to be. Mm-hmm. To be kind of go along with the theme.
Right. So here's a great example. I got this really adorable cat tarot deck.
Okay.
And the swords represent the element of air. And they tend to be cutting. They're all about, you know, your mental agility. You know, what are you thinking about? And that could be for better or for worse. Like our minds can be this powerful tool of, you know, growing, empowerment, knowledge, wisdom. But if we overthink, we sometimes end up in pretty tricky spaces as well with anxiety and all sorts of challenging thoughts and inner criticism. So it's a double-edged sword. Anyway, so the suit of the swords in this cat tarot deck is actually like cat nails.
Yeah, okay. It's awesome.
So it's like little like cat claws. It's like the nine of claws instead of the nine of swords. That's really adorable.
That's cool.
People will make plays on that. In terms of the major arcana, you're really never going to see people go too far away from the structure that's been put in place by, you know, maybe the Rider-Waite-Smith or even the Toth tarot deck, which yeah. I am not an expert on. I don't know anything about, so I can't speak to it. Okay. People will come to me fact-checking left and right, so I can't talk about Toth. Probably even said it wrong. Somebody will be like, well, actually, you say it like this. You know.
Yeah, actually, it's Toth.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. I wish I knew more about it, but it just didn't resonate with me. It wasn't a fit.
All right.
But the Rider-Waite, you know, the Fool is always going, let's think of each of the major arcana cards as having really significant lessons or mm-hmm. archetypes.
Yeah.
And the Fool sort of represents this innocent, youthful person that's ready to experience the world. They're just leaping forward, carefree,
yeah.
unaware of the troubles of the world, unaware of the dangers of the world. They're just going to dive in and go for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that no matter what tarot deck you're looking at, there's going to be some element of that. The Fool might
gotcha.
Be, you know, there are like, you know, musical decks, like maybe somebody would try and find a musician that kind of like
embodied that spirit. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. So I know that they did that
like
kind
archetypes,
of
archetypes. And then you kind of mm-hmm. like, yeah. All right.
You find people that fit that
yeah.
Or themes that fit that.
Right.
I know that I don't know who was the Fool in the UFO tarot deck, but I know that that's pretty much the formula that they worked with. They thought about, you know, what are the traditional meanings of the tarot and how can we associate that with different figures in ufology.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's all kinds of like, yeah, there's all like, I think, yeah, like I said, you mentioned the Golden Girls deck once. I think
oh,
you
love it. Oh, yeah. Of course. I'm obsessed with the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls are great.
Oh my God. I watch it almost every night. It's like what I have to have an episode before bedtime.
There's nothing more unsettling though than seeing how old, finding out how old they were, like when they made the show. Cause then it's like, oh shit, I'm really close to, I'm quickly approaching Blanche Devereaux age here. This is getting,
really?
This is getting worrisome. They're only like in their 50s or something like that.
Oh my God. Huh.
Yeah, for real. The oldest one was Estelle Getty. She was like 73. I think the other ladies were like in their mid 50s, maybe late 50s. I don't even think they were in their 60s when the show started.
I thought Estelle was the youngest one and they had to like do her up with a ton of makeup.
I thought that too forever, but apparently not.
Oh.
So she just, yeah. Mysteries revealed here on Banal America.
Jeez, I know. What's important today is figuring out the...
I saw like a meme of it on Facebook. I almost grabbed it to send to you. Actually, believe it or not,
I'm like, oh geez.
Oh man. So would you consider yourself a witch?
That is a really interesting question. I never have really come out and just said like, hey, I'm a witch.
Right.
I've always said I'm witchy. You know, and I think that everybody can be witchy and you could be a level, you know, you could be, you know, volume one witchy or volume 10 witchy. And I'm probably a volume 9 witchy.
Oh, wow.
Like I lead a pretty natural, you know, spiritual life where I do believe that, you know, there's spirit in everything around me.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if I communicate with it well and there are opportunities for me to work with that to my benefit.
Yeah.
And I also closely follow the seasons and believe that the changing of the seasons is a wonderful way to also, you know, enjoy a little nature worship and just being able to see that everything transitions and there's a cycle to everything. So it's kind of a long-winded question for, you know, I would assume that the answer is I am a witch, but I don't ever just say like, oh, Kiki Dombrowski is a witch. I'm like, oh, I'm a witchy researcher.
Right. Well, it's kind of like
a spiritual person.
Yeah, I kind of just pulled that out of my posterior there, that question. That's just because like I was sort of looking at the bio and it's like, oh, is Kiki like? But yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you just self declare a witch, mm-hmm. right? It's not mm-hmm. like it's not like you have to. It's not like you have to do anything really. So
Yeah, you know, and there are people who may be offended by that, that I wouldn't say, like, I'm, you know, I define myself, I identify fully as a witch. I tell people I'm a witch. I don't. I just think that I'm very natural. I'm very witchy. Yeah. My father called me the alchemist child. My mother said I was the hippie goddess child. And, you know, I think those are really nice observations as well. And I think that people can lead witchy lives if they communicate with the spirits around them, whether that is, you know, just feeling a deep closeness to their pets or, you know, caretaking plants, collecting crystals, walking in nature, looking for UFOs.
Yeah. It's almost ghosts. like a awareness of the universe around you.
Yes. And an awareness that there is something above and beyond our five senses. Right. This experience that we're having can feel very limited if we just live in the five senses. And I think that being quote unquote witchy gives you the opportunity to go, there's a lot more out there. There's some things that I could experience if I exercise my mind a certain way, or if I celebrate and honor certain things, I visit certain places. And being open-minded is a very important part of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, it's interesting because, like, it's a very broad term anyway. It's like, what even is it? You know, like, how do you, right?
Yeah, you know, and I guess and that's a difficult thing to answer as well, because I will give you a different definition than the person you have on the show next week. And that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's totally open-ended in a lot of ways. So it's a lot like people with magic, where it's like someone says they like practice magic, but it's like, I might not be a magician. They don't want to, you know what I mean? So it's similar in that way. They're kind of like on the same wavelength, those two, I don't know, affectations, I guess you could say, or something like that. But
sure. When I think of somebody who says they're witchy or witch, they practice witchcraft, I feel like it's a very organic connection.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm a witch. I am going to do a love spell utilizing a red candle and rose quartz and Lang Lang oil. And then when we talk about magicians, and this is my perspective again, and I always say that because when you talk to people who get to a place where they're just, you know, constantly learning and speaking to other people, everybody is living their own lives and, you know, they have their own opinions. But when I think of somebody who calls themselves like a magician, I think of somebody who's doing something incredibly ceremonial, something that maybe, you know, maybe they are still using the rose quartz and the red candle, but it's just from a totally different perspective, where maybe they're using a Latin incantation from a grimoire from the, you know, 13th century. Whereas, you know, maybe somebody who's a little bit more of a solitary witchcraft practitioner is going to come up with a special incantation on their own.
Yeah. What amazes me about folks like you and Ren Collier and Michael Hughes, all folks from the Nashville gathering who were into this sort of realm, is just your sheer, like, breadth of knowledge. Just now when you were like rose quartz, and it's like you have this understanding of all these elements, these crystals and herbs and plants and stuff that is completely foreign to me. And it's always amazing to me when I talk to you guys, because it's like, you just have this encyclopedic knowledge of, like, you can pluck it from the air, like the different things that, like, if I wanted to improve my luck, what would I do? And I'm sure you know, like, certain crystals or whatever, or flowers, and stuff like that.
And the cool thing is Ren and Michael and I would all give you different, unique suggestions, but I still think that all of the answers would overlap with each other in some ways. And when I think about Ren and Michael, I'm like, oh my God, they're so smart. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, they just have encyclopedia level knowledge.
Well, you're incredibly smart too. Don't tell yourself short of. So you were like, when you said the crystal and the thing, and I'm just like, where does she come up with these things? I don't know. I wouldn't know how, you know. I wouldn't know what to even apply to a problem if I wanted to use the magical way.
Well, you have all sorts of incredible resources around you. That's all I got to say. If you need help with something, you let one of us know, and we'll tell you what to get, what to do, and who to talk to.
There you go. Well, that's also kind of – that's also, in a way, the thing with the tarot, too. It's like part of me's like, I don't know if I could ever do tarot because you have to really remember a whole bunch of stuff.
You know – I was thinking about that the other day. Tarot is like learning how to play an instrument or learning how to paint or learning how to speak a second language or learning, it takes a lot of effort. And for some people, they fall naturally into it, you know, and then there are some people who have to really, really put a little extra effort into it.
Yeah.
For me, fortunately, it came really naturally, and I'm really thankful for that. And that's probably why I stuck with it and just, you know, kept on practicing it. But yeah, there is a lot of memorization, but there are also tips and tricks that you can use to sort of help you get through.
Yeah.
So like we were talking about the suit of the wands, it's the element of fire. If you sort of in your mind are able to remember, okay, what are some of the things that are associated with the element of fire? Confidence, being bold, maybe sometimes being hot-tempered, but being very, very passionate, creativity, passion. These are some of the things that are associated with this element of fire. So if you get a tarot card that is in the suit of wands, if you remember kind of that little foundational knowledge of, okay, well, I have a wand card in front of me and I know that that's associated with the element of fire. Therefore, maybe these sort of characteristics will pull in the card.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with the numerology of the card. Anyways, it takes a lot. It takes a lot. It's fun once you get it.
Yeah, because I was imagining, I have this picture in my mind of me, like, trying to do the tarot for someone and then just having, like, a fucking book next to me and be like, hold on a minute, let me look that one up. I don't remember what that card is. And it's just like, oh, what a clusterfuck that would be.
You know, but I think that people do that all the time. You know, sometimes when I'm not using the Rider-Waite-Smith, like, let's say I'm using the Golden Girls tarot deck or I'm using the Cat tarot deck, I might want to have the guidebook next to me because – the creator of that deck may have some sort of really thoughtful input into the card that I wouldn't have associated with it because I was just kind of like always in the, you know, the hamster wheel of Rider-Waite, you know, Smith interpretation. But, you know, if you're using the book, that's okay. Like, we don't all have to be Miss Cleo, you know. We don't all have to be tarot masters. And to tell you the truth, I think that the tarot masters are just people that accept that they're always students of tarot.
Yeah.
And that they're always going to learn by listening to other tarot readers.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing to keep in mind too is there, and it depends on who you talk to again, the readers that you talk to, but I think you could pull a lot of meaning from just reviewing the card in front of you and looking at what's happening. Like, what is the image of, you know, like, If you've got the tower card in front of you, you look at it and you go, that looks a little tough. It's these, you know, lightning bolt hitting a tower and these people falling to the ground. You know, it's like, well, it's probably not the easiest thing to get through. Whereas you might get the Two of Cups and you see two people who are, you know, in unionship, they're holding each other's hands. They're looking at each other lovingly, you know. This has something romantic and nurturing and loving to it. So I think that, you know, you could have the guidebook next to you, but give yourself the chance to just absorb what is happening in the image in front of you. And you may be surprised at what wisdom you get just from experiencing the imagery.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because the person who created it's trying to convey like a message and
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You lived in Paris for a while?
What are you doing?
I'm sorry.
You fucking me. Yes, oh my God, ages.
No, when I went to make sure I got the names of the books right, somewhere
in my
there,
bio, it probably
there was
is.
A bio, and I'm like, Paris? So I'm like, oh, make sure you ask Kiki about that, because that sounds amazing.
I did. I lived in Paris when I was in my undergrad, so I moved there for a year to study French and art history. I didn't really learn much French, but I did learn a lot when I was over there, maybe in other subjects. But I had a great time. There were highs and lows. I think Paris is a beautiful city.
Yeah. I've been there once, like in the year 2000. It was nice. I did the same thing. I did like a semester abroad in London. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Which did is you a like lot London? Of, well,
it was, I love London, but it was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was like I assume kind of like Paris. I mean, I've never lived in a city like that before. You know what I mean? Like London, or I did live in London, but at the time it was like, this is like a culture shock to be in this, you know, one of the world's biggest cities. You're living there. It's like crazy.
Yeah. Paris was a blast. I mean, I was at an age where I just, you know, I mean, so we're talking, I lived there like 20 years ago, like 20 years ago, I would always say when I hear the bakers rolling the awnings out, that was when I knew I had to go home. Because they would be coming in to bake at like 4 a.m. and I was I guess this time I had passed. So like, it was just a totally different lifestyle for me, but I saw a lot of cool music when I was over there. I saw Oasis and Supergrass, and I went to like a trancey DJ called ATB. I'm like a big music nerd.
Yeah, I know. I saw it. Now you are going to think I'm stalking you, but I saw you on Facebook. You know, you like someone's thing on Facebook, but you get them all the time. Like the algorithms are crazy like that. And I don't see anybody sometimes for like months on end. And then it's like, oh, where's this person been? And I go to their profile and it's like, I don't see any of their shit. But yeah, you said you're going to like you're like a big Britpop fan, I think, right?
I love Britpop. So that's why I'm like excited. I was like, oh, you lived in London at like such a great time.
I know. I didn't. I think it was, I'm a huge Oasis fan. Not necessarily
so
from that experience, but later in life I became a huge Oasis fan. Then I looked back, then I kind of was like, got into their, how they all came about and everything. And it was really interesting. It was a great documentary about this crazy, they did a huge, huge concert.
At Wentworth or whatever it is.
Networth or something like that.
I was there.
It's so me too. Yeah. When I watched it, I'm like, oh.
Right, like people talk about like getting in time machines and they're like, oh, I want to see the birth of Christ. And I'm like, oh, I kind of want to get in a time machine and go to like 1992 and maybe like go to Manchester, England and start to see some of this music, you know, coming into the world. I'm such a music fanatic. And I got to see Oasis. I'm really thankful for it. And I saw them in Paris. And it was so funny because the entire audience was from England. So it was all just like, it was a sea of British people and like three French people who were just getting laughed at. And, I remember some guy let me, you know, sit on his shoulder. So I went to the front and, you know, like Liam was like right in front of me. It was so cool. And I've seen Noel play solo a couple times at the Ryman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, highly recommend. But yeah, I love music. I'm obsessed with like probably genres that are not, I don't know.
Well, the Britpop era was odd. So.
It was a niche, you know, and it depends on who you talk to. It lasted for what, 3 years? Yep.
Yeah. Well, you also lived in England. So you're kind of you're kind of like me where it's, I think in a sense where it's like, you still kind of have a kindred feeling for that place. Like I try to keep tabs on what's going on in England because I lived there for a while. It's like, talk about a magical place.
There are a handful of places in the world that I go to and I go, oh, I'm home. Like there are places I travel to and I go, oh, it feels so good to be home. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not Nashville, sadly. I come to Nashville and I'm like, God damn it. But like when I go to Savannah, I think, oh, I'm home. I feel so happy to be home. Or when I go visit my parents in Connecticut, I go, oh, I'm so happy to be home. Yeah. New England is home. But I also feel that way when I go to England. The minute I hit the tarmac in Heathrow, I'm like, I'm so glad to be home.
Yeah.
There's just something special, you know, something really magical there for me. It's funny too, when I lived in France, I actually spent a lot of weekends just taking the train. Was that that gross train that goes under the water? What is it, the Channel?
Oh, the Channel?
Whoa. Yeah. A little gross.
Why is it gross?
I don't know. It freaks me out.
Oh, okay. I would always, like it was dirty or something.
No, it was so creepy to like be under. I would have to take like a Dramamine and just knock myself out and then wake up in England.
Yeah, it's on paper, it's terrifying. It's like I don't want to be in a little tunnel
in a tube
like those people in the submarine that went to see the Titanic. It's like,
oh my god!
It's like if shit goes wrong in this tunnel, it's gonna be over. Like,
right? That's why I was like, I'm gonna take this Dramamine so I sleep through it.
Yeah. How long is the ride on the tunnel?
What, 2-3 hours?
Oh,
not that bad. Like if you take, there's like a speedy one. It's been ages since I've taken it.
The Channel. I've never been on it, but now I kind of want to try it. But I will be. Oh. I would be terrified the whole time.
I get so motion sick on trains. I can't take it. I can't do it.
Really?
That one made me so ill. I would like arrive in France green. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a bucket list item for people that, you know, can tolerate trains and want to try something weird. I mean, talk about a liminal space, being in a tube under the water in between two countries, you know?
Yeah, that's super liminal.
Yeah. Cool thing. And it was really interesting. An Uber driver said to me, one of the coolest things about traveling, he said, oh, he was so cool. And he was like, oh, he was one of my favorite Uber drivers. It's amazing, like, the people you get to talk to when you travel. He was taking me to the airport, and he's like, whatever you do, don't sleep when you get up there. I was like, what? He said, when you're that high up in the air, you're that closer to God. Like, are above Earth. You are in this atmosphere where you can receive messages and energy. And I just loved that vibe. I was like, cool. Yeah. I'm not going to take a nap.
Driver ever. Yeah.
I know. I was like, all right, usually I just play, you know, a puzzle on my phone, but maybe this time I'll try and write or do something meaningful.
Wow. Yeah. That's deep.
Yeah. Right. That was really interesting. So, yeah.
I don't think I got the chance to ask you, even though, cause we were all occupied at the Waffle House. What did you make of the Blair Witch. Yeah.
Honestly,
you've had a lot of like, you know, you've been to the pyramids, you've been to other places, you've been to some exotic places and stuff. This is like weirdly Americana, folky kind of exotic in a way. So I'm interested in your take on it.
You know, I think that my favorite parts were the drives. And I know that sounds crazy, but I was alone in my car. It was dark. I was listening to Dead Can Dance, and it was like on these winding roads at night in the middle of Tennessee.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere. And it was just this very,
it was very dark.
It was this very, mystical experience. And then the other thing I always think about with that trip is that picture of the two of us. I'm like, oh, we look so good in that picture.
I know. It really is a great picture.
I was like, that's like an album picture.
Yeah.
Like, they put out like a Hall & Oates album. Like,
folk album, yeah, for sure.
I really loved the story. I really loved being able to do that with everybody. It just felt so good. And it was really fun to go into caves. Like, how cool are caves?
Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah.
I had Recluse, Steven Snyder, on the show back a few months ago. And yeah, we were reminiscing about it. And yeah, I just remember especially the guy about to lead us into the cave. And then he like gives us all these like safety instructions, and I'm like, oh shit, this is like, what have we gotten ourselves in? Like, he's like, if you fall, just go with the fall or something like that. I'm like, what the fuck? What do you mean, dude? Like, no one told me about falling.
I mean, we weren't spelunking, but you know, the thing about the cave systems around here is that, you know, it makes me think of, you know, the whole Hellier universe and talking about the mammoth caves and sort of like the super high strangeness that's taking place in this giant cave system underneath us. And so it really felt like, you know, caves feel like a portal into the underworld. So it felt sort of like a hillbilly portal to.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
So we went to the Waffle House. It felt very Tennessee. It was great. That's another thing I highly recommend if you're in Tennessee. Make the adventure out there. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The stories were great. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, we lucked out, and it's kind of like, it's hard to give people this kind of advice, but like, if you can, do it in a communal way, like we did, because it was pretty much like all the speakers who stuck around for Strange Realities and a bunch of the attendees. It was like, everybody kind of knew we were going out to the Bella Witch Cave, and it was like maybe like 24 of us. It was, you know, a shared experience that we all have together. It was awesome.
And so cool for everybody, because all of us came with our weird knowledge and we're just throwing these weird questions at the tour guide. Like, are there any Bigfoots around here? Like, when's the last time somebody's seen a UFO?
Yeah.
So it was a really,
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
I know laughing about it with Kutch, because I remember we were at the beginning, they give you this tour of like the house that's like a replica of the house, and the young woman who was doing the thing. Like, I believe it was her kids, or it was like a family run, could have been cousins. It was like a family run operation. So it was two little kids, like running around kind of as she was doing her presentation. And part of me at times was like, am I the only one seeing these? Like, are these ghosts? Like, I genuinely was like, once or twice, I'm like, you're seeing these kids running around, right, Kutch? Like, it's not just me. There's these kids that are kind of like making a ruckus.
Right. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool place.
It was fun.
Tennessee is fun to visit. It's a good hangout.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Nashville's great.
I'm glad you'll be back this November.
I believe that's the case. I don't know if Adam's announced it yet, but I would say it's a very, very good chance.
Well, to be continued then.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Stay tuned, folks. Now, do you use... You literally wrote the book on divination. Do you use it in your everyday life? Like, that's the question. I got
great question.
Do you use it and how?
Yes, and I use it in all different ways. Obviously, my go-to is tarot. I have been keeping a journal where I'm trying to read almost daily. I don't really do it religiously every single day, but I'll pull a couple cards for myself. And you know, it's kind of interesting because you could look back and almost like, you know, see like what cards keep repeating, what happens when I see this card over and over again. I believe it or not, when the eclipse started, I did a tarot reading with a spread that I created specifically for solar eclipses. I did that during the solar eclipse. And then I have a trinket kit that I love, and I have crystal kit that I use. I have a shell kit that I use, and I take those out every now and then. And sometimes I'll pull a crystal to clarify an answer with tarot. Maybe I get a shitty tarot card and I'm not happy with it. And then I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just grab a crystal and see which one I pick from the kit and see if that makes me feel any better.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. So it could be like an amplifier.
Divination.
Oh, totally. I think that's such a fun thing to do. I've seen people use pendulums with tarot readings. I've thrown runes over the tarot cards before to see how they interact with the cards and what the interpretation or the meaning would be about their, you know, the runic and the tarot interaction.
Interesting.
Yeah. So definitely divination's a big deal to me. I think there are signs and nods from the universe if you ask for them. I even think that when I go on walks, you know, like what flowers do I see?
Yeah.
What is the flowers folklore? What lesson could that give me? Yeah. You know, the stereotypical, oh, I saw a hawk. That means, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I'm not always looking like with binoculars, but like, you know, always.
You're cognizant of it.
I'm open to messages from something greater.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I can tell that with you. You have a very open spirit. So it's very, I know, you know, I can see you're very connected in a way to what's around you. So
thank you.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Thank you. Sometimes I feel that way. I'm saying thank you and I'm kind of giggling because, you know, I work in a really intense corporate day job. And so there's definitely, and it feels, I'm a Gemini and it kind of feels very stereotypical Gemini. Like I have two lives.
Yeah.
I have this very like stingy, you know, cut through the bullshit. Let's get shit done. You know, corporate job where.
Right.
it could be very intense and stressful. And then as soon as that's done, I'm like, oh, I think I'll take a class where, you know, I replicate a Bob Ross painting. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which they have here, by the way.
That sounds fucking awesome.
Oh, my God. I was so good. I'm going to an acrylic painting class this weekend, but I'll definitely do another Bob Ross one. But anyways, so it's just like, it's a very interesting thing to hear, like, oh, I'm an open spirit, because I'm thinking, like, I just closed my, you know, my day job computer where, you know, I was on doing training and Excel spreadsheets. And it just feels like, you know, I'm really exercising both sides of my brain, I guess. And it's really, you know, you have to really be aware of your boundaries and how much you let in and how much you allow to become personalized when you work in an environment like that. Because if you are an open spirit, you could take everything personally and get really irritated really quickly.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, I swear a lot. It's a good thing I work at home.
What about, there's something I was going to ask you about. I think we may have talked about this because, you know, I like drama, I guess, but not like in a bad way, but,
I love drama, so let's spill the tea.
You ran into some problems where like people were copying your fucking name and likeness on social media, like fraudsters.
Yes.
It was a widespread problem. It wasn't
huge problem.
Like targeted. It was like you were just swept up by this craze.
I was part of the party. I was an honored guest to a really uncomfortable party. And it's something that seems to be happening with a lot of esoteric, people on social media, authors in the metaphysical and witchy community, tarot readers. It's like what happens is somebody creates and mimics your social media tag, and they literally like copy everything from your page and put it on theirs. And then they start reaching out to all your friends and saying shit like, oh, you're cursed. Like if you pay me out, you know, but they think it's Kiki saying like, you know, like I want to give you a reading because I think you're cursed. Can you send me $100?
Oh, my God.
Like and this is not just me. I mean, a lot of people are dealing with that. And so that's actually why I used to have two social media accounts, one for like my personal life and one for, you know, the author stuff. And I got rid of one of them and just authenticated the other so I could try and keep people. I mean, but somebody emailed me the other day and was like, hey, a year ago you reached out to me and told me I was going to hit this really hard time in my life and it happened. Can you, help me? You know, I was like, dude, that wasn't me.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know what to tell you. Hang in there.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's like, turns out the scammer has a gift. We need to get in touch. We found the one scammer who's like, no, I really am. I really have the gift. I just.
So I think that's a great thing for listeners to keep in mind too. That
absolutely.
If you have favorite, you know, witchy writers, you follow people that are, you know, sort of like public figures who do tarot or astrology or, you know, are sort of in the sort of like weird realms, be aware that there are people on every social media platform that are going to try and scam you by making you think that there's somebody that they're not. Like a few people have said, oh, you know, I got a friend request and a message from you. And I'm like, it wasn't me.
I'm constantly amazed that, of these situations that people get into with psychics and shit and end up giving them like a ton of money. And it's like, Jesus, dude, like at what point does it dawn on you that like,
And
then give them $10,000, like.
And to your point too, like at some point you have to think like, do I need to seek a tarot reader or is there another specialist who can help me through this?
Right. Exactly.
You know, like if you're at the point where you're like, I'm willing to pay somebody 10 grand to lift a curse. Like, dude, your money can go somewhere better. Not fucking cursed. Like
take a vacation with that money, man.
Go to Egypt. Go to Egypt. Like, or, you know, I don't know, go to breathwork classes, take painting classes. Like, I don't know. Donate it to a charity. Go to a therapist, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
there are so many things that you could be doing that are probably a little bit more beneficial than just blindly trusting. And it's also unfair too, because you know that these scammers are seeking out people who are in a vulnerable and uncomfortable place. So it's not, you can't just like shame or judge people.
No, not at all. No,
they're in a rough spot. But but my, what I encourage people to do is just pause, make sure that you're really talking to that person, and just, somebody says that stuff to you, just don't believe it. That you've got a better place to put that money.
Right. Yeah. If anyone comes to you and says you're cursed, like,
yeah, out of the blue, that's crap. Like, who would do that?
Ugh. It's messed up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you follow any like of the tick? I think we talked about this when you were on in July of 2020, the TikTok, the witch talk, the sort of weird world of like online, witchery.
I am not on witch talk. I am not in the witch talk algorithm right now. My witch talk, or my TikTok feed is the Savannah Bananas.
Oh.
Cat videos.
There you go.
And like, just, that's pretty much it. like it's very like non-witchy, surprisingly. That's probably
good.
For the better, because I know that there is a lot of drama that gets stirred up.
Yeah.
Recently, there's a TikTok of this, and I did get pulled into this one. The algorithm picked me up for this.
Yeah.
There was a woman, and they caught this on like a Ring camera. So, you know, somebody's camera was like on their whatever garage. This woman pulls up into a driveway and puts this wrapped up like bundle of hair and hangs it on their door.
Oh my God.
It was so gross. So it's like, you see this, like, it looks like a ponytail of like gross cut off hair, like wrapped up with ribbons, and they just like hooked it on the door handle.
Oh my God.
And so the person, obviously the person had this like Ring cam video of this woman doing this, and they're like, dude, what does this mean? And so there were people all over Witch Talk that were like, oh, it's this, it's this, it's this.
Yeah.
You know, there were some pretty bad answers, and then there were some really useful and helpful answers too.
Wow.
It was really fun to see, like, it was really fun to watch people, you know, get in the discussion about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. What was the con? Did the person know who the person leaving the curse or whatever was? Was it just like, oh, this is just some random person?
The last part of the story that I got was not that it wasn't from the perspective of the person that received the bundle of hair. It was kind of like witches chiming in and kind of like saying, yeah, like, I don't know what this is, but you don't want to burn it. You want to bury it.
Or,
you know, people kind of like giving their opinions about what to do with it and what it may have been.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were saying too, that if it was her hair, like it would have been a weird object to use if they're trying to do something harmful or malicious. It's just a whole weird thing.
That sounds like an interesting community. Yeah.
Yeah. To be continued. I'm not part of Witch Talk, but every now and then I get pulled in.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'm going to stick with my ASMR and my, you know, my videos of the Savannah Bananas dancing around. And
have you seen the Savannah? You must have seen
them. I have.
Them.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen them.
Oh, this is something I need to – oh, don't let me forget, because you're on my list of people to ask.
All right.
So I am on the lottery. I am in the lottery, hopefully, to get tickets to see the Savannah Bananas at Fenway.
Oh, wow.
So if I get some tickets, I'm going to let you know, and I'd love for you to join me.
Absolutely. Is this year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I won't find out if I'm able to get tickets until, I think, June or something. But, like, I mean, they sell out instantly.
You know, they're huge.
20 bucks a ticket, and then they resell for, like, 300. It's goofy. But I've seen them a couple times, and it's an event.
Yeah.
Talk about a surreal event. You know, it's like a modern day sort of ritual, like a poppy, sporty kind of equivalent of the eclipse. It's an event. You leave a different person.
Well, for folks who don't know, they're like, they're like a minor league baseball team akin to like the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah.
And they play by funky rules. There's all these different rules. There's all these different like rituals in a way you could say, of each game where like something will happen, you know, and at different stages of the game, they do crazy stuff. A guy's on stilts. It's like, it's a whole production. And it got so popular in Savannah that then they decided to become like a national touring, team. Like the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah. It's wild. Yeah. The tallest pitcher in the league, the guy on the stilts.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have like famous people showing up and like participating, and they have some guy, I don't know if it was like NSYNC. It was one of those boy bands. Like some guy came to one of their shows and was singing it's fun. Yeah. It's a blast.
They are cool. I will definitely go if you get.
Yes, yeah, and I've never been to Fenway.
Oh, so you'll love it.
I've been outside of Fenway, like, accidentally. Like I just didn't. I was like, whoa, is that Fenway?
I forgot you're a big baseball fan too. Yeah,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
so, yeah. I'm thinking of getting MLB. You know, and there's all sorts of superstitions and magic in baseball as well.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All kinds of rituals and like all the threes. There's all kinds of threes, like in all different places and everything. The third bases, the three strikes.
People that won't shave if they keep having like a winning streak, they won't shave their beard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of baseball.
Well, next time you're up here, even if you don't get Savannah Banana tickets, we should go to Fenway then. So.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Boston for a couple days in June, I think, but I have to go work.
Isn't that the worst? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'm happy and about it, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know anything about Boston.
But you're from Connecticut.
Yeah, but I was always like going,
driving the New York side, yeah.
Yeah, I was always driving to New Haven and getting on the Metro North and going to New York.
Always riding these trains.
Ugh, I can't take that train anymore either. That Metro North, gross. It stops and you're just going back and forth. Ugh, no.
Yeah, trains are an interesting experience. I haven't been on one in a long time, but yeah, it's kind of, yeah. I rode one all around Europe and Euro Rail. Yeah, it was cool. In the year 2000.
I'm so glad you knew that. Like I blurted it out and I was like, oh my God, like he's not going to know.
Yeah, for sure. After I lived in London, then I did a tour of Europe on train. It was cool. It was an interesting experience. Long time ago now, though. I'd like to get back there and check it out. So how are you feeling in Nashville, though? You moved back. You said you were kind of not, you don't, doesn't feel like home per se, but it is a nice place.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, you know, I'm a big believer in spirit of place, and every place you go has this sort of energy, and the spirit has a personality. And I think that we're compatible with some spirits of place, and others we're just acquaintances with.
That makes sense.
And I think that the spirit of Nashville and I are on good terms, but you know, we're not gonna, you know, go to each other's Thanksgiving dinners or birthday parties.
Yeah.
We're not
ride to the airport.
No, God, no. but one thing I love about Nashville is how close the woods are. You know, like being able to hike and travel, not travel, hike and kind of go on a good ramble through the forests is really easy here in Nashville. And you go in different directions and find different cool places to visit. And, there's plenty to do in Nashville if people are foodies. It's a great town. And we do have a really good group of, you know, metaphysical and witchy and spiritual and esoteric and, you know, paranormal people here as well.
Yeah, it's got a great community down there.
Yeah, yeah. It's popping. It's getting bigger by the day.
What's that?
It's getting bigger by the day. Too many people move here. Have you ever heard Nashville people say we're full?
No, but I can see it because it definitely seems like a place. I forget who I said it to when we were in Nashville, but it was like Nashville kind of gave me it felt like it was like the Los Angeles of the South. Like it's like you're very likely to run into someone who's famous in Nashville you know, it's sort of like this hub of entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. That was what somebody said to me. They're like, oh, Nashville is like a redneck Los Angeles. I was like, yeah. And you do, you run into people, you see, you know, Steve Tyler at the Pancake Pantry, you see Nicole Kidman at Whole Foods, you know, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. It's a cool place. I really like it. I'm very fortunate that Adam's been so, Adam Sane of Conspiracy Normal has been so, generous to keep bringing me down there. So
yeah, we have to think of a what are we going to do to top Bell Witch?
I don't know. We're going to have to do something. Kutch is really into ghosts now, so maybe a ghost hunt. Have you ever been on a ghost hunt?
Yeah, I am not a night person. I'm just like, why can't these ghosts just be day people? I remember I was on a
ghost hunt.
I'm fine with that because I won't doze off in those sessions where you're just quiet, waiting in the dark. I can't do it.
Well, it's funny, because we were talking about Paramania this year, and we had been kicking around Kentucky, and one of the things Kutch wanted to do was the Waverly Hills, like, overnight, and I'm like, I'll do it, dude, but I'm like, it's like 11 at night to 4 in the morning, like, I feel like by 2 in the morning, I'd be like, I'm ready to go back to the fucking hotel.
Yeah, I don't give a shit if there's, like, a ghost tap dancing in front of me and serving me, like, a latte. Like, I just don't care, it's 2, I need to go home.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So. Ugh. I'm so sensitive to that kind of stuff. I just, and I'm not, I guess this is why I'm not really into the ghost paranormal as much, because it feels very heavy. Every time you sort of go on these ghost tours, you hear these dreadful, very morbid, sad, depressing, tragic stories.
That's true. Yeah.
I just don't need that in my life right now. Like, dude, we live in late stage capitalism America where, like, I literally, like, can barely get, like, I mean, like, I don't need to add tragedy to what is out there already. So I don't need to go on a ghost tour and hear about how somebody, you know, committed a double murder, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why, like, I've really shifted into, you know, like, magic and spirit of place and spiritual research and, you know, connecting to what's above and beyond us. But I also, as you know, I'm obsessed with cryptids. I love Bigfoot. Yes. I love Bigfoot. So, yeah.
I don't think it's happening this year, but we'll definitely have to come up with some kind of Bigfoot. We talked about a Bigfoot retreat for a while, but
I'm really sad the Bigfoot spring break didn't work. But I mean, that money now is me. I'm going to go see Pulp in Chicago. So
exactly, that was kind of my eclipse. Yeah, that was my I gotta shift the money around different places here.
Exactly.
Once I committed to the eclipse, it was like, I don't know.
That was a lot of work, too.
When we're down in Nashville, we'll figure out. You said it's close to the woods. Maybe we'll find some place that's a Bigfoot hub or something like that. I don't know.
I wonder if there is somebody that we could talk to. I don't think that there's really a place Bigfoot experience like in Nashville. Like, what do you mean? Go get hot chicken and then go squatching? Like, I just don't know if – I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm open to it, but – I'm sure if you go either north to Kentucky or you go out east closer to, you know, like I would say Dollywood, but, you know, the Smoky Mountains out that way, I'm sure that there's got to be somebody we could sync up with that's like in a Bigfoot group.
Yeah, there are.
That will take us out and we could do some wood knocks at 11 and then go home and sleep at an appropriate time. Yeah, maybe there's something. I don't know. I'd personally like to know, to be honest.
I wonder if people do that, like, with, I guess they do with ghost hunting, but I wonder, do they really stay out in the woods till like 4 o'clock in the morning? Because I wouldn't fucking want to do that at all. Like, forget the haunted house ones, but the prospect of, I guess if you're camping, right? I guess if you're camping, you're technically doing that, but
Yeah, I need to glamp at this point. Like, I need to
be able
to
absolutely.
Charge my phone and have a hot shower. But yeah, I mean, from what I gather, I'm no expert, but, you know, people that, you know, sort of study and are trying to track Bigfoot say that Bigfoot is nocturnal. So he's up and popping and moving around
at night. Yeah.
At night. Yeah. But occasionally people have day sightings. So, whoops. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You there?
Yeah, my cat just walked across the keyboard.
Pip or Bert?
It was Pip.
Oh, Pip.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, did she close you? Yeah.
Well, I have no question attached to this, but I sort of I'm marveling, amusing that maybe you can appreciate and add on to it. But because one time, you know, I had a few drinks and I'm like, just the idea popped in my head, you know, it'd be an interesting book, like the history of rabbits, because, you know, I'm a big rabbit lover.
Yeah.
But then, like, as I kind of like looked into it, it's like they don't eat these, like, rabbits, cats, dogs, fish, like, they have been around so long, you can almost not, you almost don't know the history of these things. They've just been a part of our culture for as long as anyone can fucking remember. It's kind of, like, awe-inspiring in a way.
Yeah. It makes me think about how cats apparently are very, like, how cats were in ancient Egypt is how cats are today. Like, their personalities have not shifted or evolved that much over the time, over ages. I mean, they're doing something right. They were worshipped, and now I spend so much money at Chewy.com for my cats. It's ridiculous. I wonder that about other, I mean, and then you think about fish, and you think about these sort of like ancient creatures.
That's what it is. I actually redid this like recently, where I'm like, oh, I want to know more about the history of it. It was something like they haven't changed from how they first popped up like 40 million years ago. It's like they're pretty much the same animal since then. It's like, that's fucking crazy, dude.
The rabbits have to be different from what they used to be. Like, it's Larry, right? You have Larry.
Yes, Larry.
So Larry is different than whatever, a hare that you would find in the Scottish Highlands, you know, in Neolithic times.
A hare, right? Yeah. Well, that's a different animal, but I guess the basic general rabbit that, like, that springs forth all these other different little species. It's all the same creature that's been around for like 40 million years. Kind of like cats. It's kind of like they haven't, you know, they've kind of fanned out into different species, but it's all basically the same archetypal animal. It's crazy.
Dogs are different, though. I mean, they went from
They do seem different, yeah.
I could tolerate dogs. I had a dog, but they're so busy.
Yeah, they are.
So busy.
Yeah. I've never really been a dog person. I always thought, like, if I got a dog, I'd become a dog person, but I have never had a dog, so I never became a dog person. I became a rabbit person, so.
I think it's interesting, even, like turning this into, like, a talk about, like, magic and how people have different familiars and how people believe that, you know, they have such a this like, sort of, like, spiritual bond with an animal.
Yeah.
That there's sort of this like magical kinship, and, you know, what does their familiar say about their personality and the work that they're here doing? You know, like I think it's really great that you have a rabbit. Like, that's so unique. I think that's really wonderful. How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's actually behind the glass door now. He's like looking at me right now.
Aww.
But I have, I don't think I've really talked about him at all, but you're such a huge animal person, you'll appreciate this. The people that we got them from, he came from just like the most like love-packed house, like of just incredible good spirit that I've ever encountered. This guy was like, I don't want to talk too much about it, but the guy was like 60. He had three kids that are already all grown up, and then him and his wife took in three like young kids to help raise, essentially.
Wow.
And it was like, and the three young kids were, you know, there in the house and with him and his wife and everything, and they raised rabbits. So Larry is, they must have just held him all the time, because he is like the tamest rabbit I've ever encountered. Like my previous rabbit, Ralph, was like very kind of standoffish and skittish. They're all skittish, but like he would never let you pick him up whatsoever. Like, it was always a fight. With Larry, it's like, I open the door, he'll hop out and jump right on me, and I can just hold him. It's
that's lovely.
Yeah, it really is. It's so bizarre. It's just like, wow, this.
It's like a cat rabbit.
Yeah, he really is. He's really remarkable. He'll, like, just bite on the cage and his house. You know, I try to call it a cage, but it is. But he'll bite on the thing, and then all I have to do is open the thing, and he just wants to come out and hang out. It's like, really, like, we're slowly weaning him into house, you know, eventually after, like, a certain amount of time and observation, then they can come out and just live in the house. You know what I mean? But
wow.
They like to eat wires and shit. So you got to kind of train them to, yeah, like you don't want to go over there. That's not, you know, and kind of shush them around different parts of the house until they got a little handle on where it's cool to go.
Oh, so. I'm just so happy to hear things are going well. And
yeah. Well, it's really remarkable. I mean, you've had cats for a long time. It's like, I never really had a pet. So then I had Ralph and that was really cool. And I really noticed like that. My life just changed because when Ralph died, I went like 2 years without an animal. Once you get that animal back in your life, it's really a remarkable connection that, you know, it's really beneficial, I guess is the best way to put it for me. Yeah. I mean, I think most people would be that way. You know, when you have that animal connection, it's a pretty awesome part of your life.
It is. And I love that. That's such a good point. And it makes me think too, like even calling them a pet or like, that's my pet. I own that pet. I can't think of them that way. I think, right. Well, I'm their guardian. I'm their steward. They just hang out with me. They're part of the family. And I always think it's funny when people like kind of tease for saying fur babies. I'm like, you just haven't had that experience. Once you have a fur baby, it's different.
Yeah. Sure.
There is a special bond and it's a really, you know, it is also a very witchy experience to have that bond with an animal.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, my life has changed for the better having animals around. That's for sure. They're healing. They're hysterical. They're amusing.
Yeah.
And
somebody once said like everybody should put out an album of like the songs that they make up and sing to their animals.
Oh my God, I was thinking that today.
Constantly, yeah.
You know the song "This Is Why I'm Hot." This is why I'm hot.
Like, I think so.
God, anyways, I changed all the lyrics to "This Is Why I'm Meow," and I was singing, like, I change every song to fit into, you know, cat lingo. I think that's a really good idea. Did you ever hear Jingle Cats?
No, is that like a Christmas cat thing?
Indeed, it is. It's an entire album of Christmas carols being meowed.
Oh wow!
By a chorus of cats. Yeah. Highly recommend.
Oh wow! All right, Christmas carols with cats. I like it. So you got a book coming out. You just turned it in. So when can people expect the book to be out?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. To be determined. The biggest recommendation I could give is stay in touch with me. I am very, very active on my blog at the moment.
Yes. We didn't get a chance to talk about that tonight. But
we've just been having a good chit-chat, and that's fine.
I know. It's been great. It felt weirdly like a when I popped that Paris question on you, it was like an inside the actor's studio kind of thing. It was it's like, so you lived in Paris for a while.
Like, oh my God.
It's like, oh shit, I threw over that one. I didn't mean to. But no, it's been a fantastic conversation. I'm interrupting you just to put over this blog. You started writing on the blog recently, and it's fantastic. It's really, really good stuff. We were not going to get into it because we've gone a while, and we'll leave something for the next time you're on the show.
Oh, thanks.
But you had a recent post, "The Magic and Mythology of the Egg." It came out around Easter, and it was it was fantastic. It really was. I loved it. I put kudos in there on Facebook when you posted it. It was like, so these are really in-depth, thoughtful blog posts about mythology. You put one up today with wildflowers that was fantastic. Really enjoyable reads.
I appreciate that. Sometimes I feel like the only person that's reading it is my mother, which I'm really thankful for. Like, I always want my mom to read my stuff. But like, you know, you put things out there. And the reason I started becoming active on the blog is because I'm honestly in between books, and I'm polishing one of those self-published books. I wrote a book on the Wheel of the Year.
Yeah.
And it was this beautiful book, but it just needs polishing. And people have been asking for a copy of the book. I'm like, it's out of print. Yeah. But how about this? How about I put excerpts of it up on my blog? So what you're seeing are actually passages that have been revised and modified for whatever comes out someday in the far future of the Eight Extraordinary Days book. So just as we go through the seasons, I'm writing relative posts about, you know, stuff that you could go outside and interact and encounter, you know, interact with an encounter. And, you know, so yeah, the wildflower one, you know, that was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Thank you so much for reading that. I appreciate that. And yeah, the egg poster is really fun. Eggs, who knew, right?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so in-depth. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's more. They had more and more layers of interesting aspects of related to the egg. So, and folks can find that at kikidombrowski.com. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'll spell it out for you, folks. It's KIKIDOMBROWSKI.com, but just put in Kiki Dombrowski on the Google machine there, you'll find it.
I used to be able to tell people, yeah, okay, if you put in Google Kiki Tarot, I pop up in the search.
Oh no!
So you could do Kiki Tarot.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say you used to, but then something. Oh,
it does now. It's just not at the top spot. It's in the second.
Gotcha. All
but
right.
Still,
yeah.
That's another way too. If people can't spell my last name, but yeah, the one thing I'll say about the blog entries is that they're not clickbait. You know, it's not.
Oh,
it's not something where you're gonna go and, you know, go through a slideshow and be done in 3 minutes. It's a passage from a book.
Yeah. No. I mean, this is like these blog posts are like, you know, put on a cup of coffee, sit on your couch, put it all up, pull it up on the iPad and just fucking relax and get into this, you know, this entry. That's they're fun. You know, I look forward to the future ones and sort of when the weather gets better, you know, popping out on the back porch and reading whatever the latest thing is. So they're fun reads like that.
Yeah, so thank you. And so that's basically what I would say right now is if people want to see what I'm up to creatively is to hang out with me on my blog, but also stay in touch with me. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and as of today, I'm on Threads. Uh-huh. I'm going to give that a test drive.
Yeah, I saw your post today. I meant to respond. I am still on Twitter. I don't like it. I'm going to use the analogy I've used on the show a couple of times for folks who are like, oh, but no, you just keep repeating yourself. But anyway, it's like you're at a shitty party with a good group of friends and no one can decide where to go. So you end up staying at the shitty party. That's like, cause the paranormal community on Twitter is really pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's some fun stuff there, but like in the wider range of that site, it is just a horrible fucking place now.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but no one can decide, are we going to go to Threads? Are we all going to move over to Tumblr? Blue Sky. Are we going to do Instagram?
Yeah.
And it's just like, no one can decide. So everyone's like, let's just stay here and, you know, let's just stay at this shitty party for a little while longer till we figure out what we want to do next. It's like, this is sort of, people are stuck there in a sense.
Yeah. Well,
and it sucks.
Maybe I'll end up back there again, but for right now, I'm avoiding it. But maybe not. Threads seems really pleasant, and so I'm digging it.
It's cool. I'm trying to. I have a thing on there, but I haven't really. It's all habitual. Really, what it is, you know, it's like you just got to spend more time on Threads and less time on Twitter, and eventually you get it. Now you're on Threads all the time, so that's kind of how it is.
So.
Anyway, yeah. Well, on that, I don't know why we got this. What has been a chit chat, and I've loved it. This has been so much fun. I can't thank you enough, Kiki. Kiki Dombrowski is the website .com. It's hopefully I'll see you in Nashville in October or November, I believe, is when it should be unfolding. And you know, it's been great. I'm so happy I got you back on the show, and I got the chance to. Talk with you again, and it won't be another 4 years before we do this again, I promise.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's been it's been such a treat to catch up with you, and I'm just so grateful that you would invite me to come back and that we could, you know, have a good catch up and hopefully we could sync up at Fenway before Nashville in November. So I'll keep in touch with you and let you know.
We had multiple adventures. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? It'll be good.
All right.